Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, preparing for disaster in America on Tuesday, January 14th, 2014. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. Located in Palos Verdes, the Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and craft their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For more information, visit their website at www.academyofforeignlanguages.com. That's all spelled out, academyofforeignlanguages.com, or call 310-975-4133. That's 310-975-4133. You can find out more about us at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Or visit our website at thesouthbayshow.com. Preparing for disaster in America. This is a subject that can never be treated lightly, but we do our best to make it interesting, engaging, and yes, even entertaining to learn the few key skills and primary information that could save your life, your family's lives, that of a neighbor in a time of crisis, or the life of a treasured pet. Our mission is to engage hearts and minds and build knowledge and skills to help you prepare for whatever may come. This show is a true collaboration with Solid Roots in the Community and a partnership with the Official Disaster Preparation Establishment. Our producer is the president of the local Manhattan Beach Community Emergency Response Team Association, Mr. George Butts. Hey, George, how are you doing today?
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, listeners. I'm fine, thank you. It's going to be a beautiful day here in Southern California.
Yes, yes, it is. And, of course, with us today is owner, producer, writer of South Bay by Jackie.com, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you doing today?
I'm well this morning, Joe. Good morning, George.
Oh, good morning, Jackie.
Yes, it's a beautiful day, and it's going to be a great day. We're going to be doing a second parter today. Exciting. Jackie, who's our guest today?
It's always good when we have a returning guest within a month's time, because you know it was a good show, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, our guest again this morning is Dave Sauer, an avid outdoorsman, hunter, and horseman. Dave is a 30-year veteran of law enforcement, serving the last 16 years as a patrol sergeant. His other duties have included 9 years as an emergency preparedness and search and rescue team coordinator and supervisor for his department's mounted enforcement detail. As a California postmaster instructor, he has developed and facilitated numerous training courses, including search operations, man tracking, and emergency preparedness. He is also the owner of Gunfighting, Inc., which provides firearms and tactics trainings to law enforcement and military personnel. Dave is also a Tier 1 staff instructor for Suarez International, which provides firearms, tactics, and personal security training to civilians. He can be contacted through his website at www.gunfightinginc.com. Now, about 3 weeks ago, we spoke with Dave on the topic of personal safety, and today we're going to continue that conversation. Welcome back to the program, Dave. We are so glad you could join us again this morning.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me back.
Yes, we're really glad you're back, Dave, and of course, just like part one, we indicated that this is a subject that we have wanted to cover, but as a group, George and Jackie and myself had decided early on that we would only cover this subject if we had the proper personnel, because it's a very sensitive topic, but we knew we would enjoy, with the right person, we would enjoy this topic because it's critical. With all the talk we've done about saving lives of others and ourselves in a time of crisis, we know that one element of that issue. One element of everything that we talk about is truly safety from others. So Dave and George, if you're with us, I would like George for you to sort of lay out where we're going with part two, where we didn't go with part one.
Well, in part one, we talked about our circle being within the circle, getting without, and home safety, protecting ourselves, what we can do to protect our home and ourselves. And I think what bottom line was, we did not get into the portion of the show that we've always had this this hesitation to jump into, about protecting ourselves in an incident where you're possibly, somebody actually comes in and confronts you. This is where we've hesitated for almost 2 years to get into this, and that's where I'm feeling we're at now.
Okay. I just want to give Jackie a moment. Jackie, is that your basic recollection? Have we covered the preliminaries? Where are we going first off in part two?
Well, I have to tell you, I heard you giggling when George mentioned the circle.
Yes, right, because I couldn't get out of it.
You couldn't get out of the circle, yeah. Yeah, and just quickly, for anybody that didn't listen to part one, and a lot of people did listen to part one, that was such a great show. I think that Dave should quickly recap that whole circle concept.
Okay.
And then we go from there.
Okay, great.
Yeah,
sure. Last time we talked about, where does violence occur? And we talked about how normal folks who live normal lives and get along with one another, we have this circle of socially accepted behaviors that we use and socially accepted rules of getting along. And if we think of all of those normal behaviors and customs and rules that we use to get along being contained inside of the circle, that violence exists outside of that circle. That when someone, a predator person, for whatever reason, tries to victimize another person and hurt them or steal something from them or in any way victimize them, that violence is totally outside of socially accepted rules of getting along. And the criminal element actually is very good at using the rules of the circle to get close enough to us. They are often very charming. They've got great sob stories. They use our natural inclination to avoid conflict and try to be helpful to gain access to us and to get close enough to victimize us. And so it's really important, first of all, that a person understands that when violence occurs, it is outside that circle, and that a person needs to be willing to go outside that circle to deal with it. And that's where often when, for example, the hot topic of the last couple of days in the news has been the verdict of the recent trial of the police officers,
right.
And it's common that when people see violence, even legal violence, when they see the police using force against another, that it is shocking. Because it's not something that they're used to, and it's not something that they see all the time. So even legal violence is outside that circle of what is normal to us, and it seems wrong,
right.
And even when it may not be. And a person who is going to defend themselves from someone who's trying to hurt them or kill them needs to first be willing to go outside that circle to become as violent as they need to be to win that encounter.
Right.
And then beyond that, now we can talk about the tools and the rules and the laws around that whole dynamic.
So, Dave, you know, there's a meme, of course, with that acquittal of manslaughter and second degree murder charges for those two officers. There's a meme on the internet that's famous shootings that were somehow caught on video, whether it was dash cam or whatever, that looked horrible, looked, you know, like an unlawful death by police, but then later on close examination turns out, well, he was going for a gun. You can clearly see the gun after the fact. But during the event, it didn't look that way, except a trained officer knew what to look for and made a decision, my life or his life. And at that moment, took that perpetrator's life and then was later justified. Dave, 30 years on the force, or 30 years in law enforcement, and many, many years on the force, how close have you gotten to that point that you knew it was you or them?
Oh, well, that it's happened several times, and several times to folks that I've trained.
Right.
And it is interesting that those decisions are often made in those split second moments, and then of course they're Monday morning quarterbacked frame by frame.
Right.
And the video only shows one perspective, of course.
Right.
When there is a 360 degree perspective of the encounter. And really, officers are guided by the same principles that citizens are bound by when defending themselves. We don't have a separate set of rules or laws that are for police and a separate set of laws for regular citizens. Because after all, the police are citizens as well.
Right.
And so I think today we'll talk about some of those laws that that govern those kinds of encounters.
Okay.
I just want to jump in here real quick, Joe.
Yeah.
Now, this is something that is obvious to us, but I just want to point it out. These guys, law enforcement, are trained to deal with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Civilians are not.
Right.
And that's the big gap.
Okay.
That's a huge gap. They're ready to deal with violence because they have the training on it, but most civilians aren't.
Now, I'm sorry. One editorial note. I'm getting a buzz with Dave's audio.
Is it Dave's or George's?
I'm not sure. George, can you put your phone on mute? George?
My phone was on mute.
Oh,
was on mute?
Okay.
But
yeah.
If you're not on mute, let's Dave, can you give us a few
is
syllables?
Is this better?
It is.
Okay.
That's wonderful. Okay.
Much better.
Okay.
Okay. We're back.
Yeah. So Dave, the bottom line is trained officers make these decisions, and good or bad, they make these decisions. But we want to get right into it. We're not trained, many of us. If we have a weapon, we haven't used it in years. We acquired it legally. Maybe we got training. Maybe we really didn't. Maybe we just went in and did the 3-day background check and purchased a firearm. We went to the gun range a few times, and something is happening. And we're not talking about a violent break-in. I mean, those are a different subject altogether. But we're talking about, you know, disaster preparation. Either we have warning or we don't. Something's occurred. We now have to secure our properties. We know, we heard, we see there are bad guys in the neighborhood. What do you say to people that for whom this isn't a normal experience, but they now know they have hours or minutes and not days before there will be an encounter?
Well, one of the great things about shows like this is in the emergency preparedness world, there's a saying that says the value isn't in the plans, but in the planning. Because the plan that you make probably isn't going to fit the real-life scenario that happens. But the process of slowing things down, thinking ahead of time, coming up with what-if scenarios, and determining the proper course of action in those scenarios, that's where the real value in the planning process comes. Mm-hmm. And that's what people need to do, is they need to think about ahead of time likely scenarios that they may find themselves in and decide, okay, if this particular scenario happened where we had a major earthquake and it affected major traffic ways and water supplies and food distribution, and now just the basic survival necessities of life started to become a premium commodity, and there became roving bands of marauders trying to, for self-gain, steal whatever they could and take advantage of the fact that a lot of people aren't armed and prepared to defend themselves, then how might one go about doing that? And last time we talked about strength in numbers and getting together with your neighbors and your neighborhood and coming up with a neighborhood plan and banding together and figuring out how you're going to contain and cordon off your particular area and defend it and make it a harder target for would-be criminals. But when it comes down to actually being confronted by a bad guy, then what? That's what a person needs to think about. They need to think, what would I do in that situation? If this happened at my house, somebody wanted to kick in my front door and steal my food, how am I prepared to deal with that? Some people, and I get this question often, is, well, at what point do I take action? That's a common question. At what point do I take action? And the answer, my answer is always the same. You take action when the consequences of not taking action are unacceptable to you. And that's maybe different for each individual. Some people may decide that if all they want is my food, it's okay if they come in and take it. I'm not going to try to keep them from doing that. Some people might decide that, no, I'm not going to allow that to happen. That's for my family's survival, and I'm not going to jeopardize my family's survival by allowing somebody else to take what we need.
Right.
So I'm not going to allow that to happen. And it comes down to even just day-to-day things. When we do self-defense for women courses, that is a common question, and I tell the ladies that you act when the consequences of not acting are unacceptable, and if it's acceptable to be victimized and brutalized and raped to you, then I guess you don't have to act. But if that's unacceptable, then you need to make a decision that you're willing to act, and then decide how are you going to do that and be prepared with a plan and some skills.
Let me ask Jackie, who actually has quite a bit of experience with self-defense courses for women. Jackie, often I've heard throughout the years, sisters, cousins, and others who, you know, we've had these conversations with, the thing that you want to do most in a situation where a man is attacking you is to make yourself just a bad target, screaming, yelling, kicking, anything that would just indicate to them, hey, this is not going to work easy, therefore I'm going to go somewhere else.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But in a situation...
But that's not always...
Right.
Potentially the answer. For example, we had a situation some years back where a bad guy, a rapist, broke into a woman's home in the early morning hours, held her at knife point while he raped her, and she quietly went along with it without putting up a fight because her toddler son was in the next room, and she was afraid that if she put up a fight, in fact, he told her that don't make a noise, don't wake your kid, or I'll kill him. And so she was afraid that he would kill her son if she tried to defend herself, and that consequence was not acceptable to her, so she didn't act.
Yeah, and it you know, every situation is different.
Exactly.
You know, if I'm at the ATM and somebody comes up and puts a gun in my back and says, just give me the money, I'll turn around and hand them the money. It's just money. You know, if I'm getting in my car and somebody comes up behind me and says, give me the keys to the car, here, take the car. I don't care about the car.
Right.
You know, but if somebody's trying to hurt me physically or hurt somebody I'm with, that, you know, that's a different story.
So,
right.
Dave, where, you know, in that scenario, okay, like Jackie's saying, the ATM, hey, I got a limit. I can only take out so much. Take it. Car, take the car. I'll walk. Take the car. But when they're coming to hurt you personally, and we're getting – there's too many scenarios. We're talking about home protection. We want to limit it to that and therefore talk about scenarios of home protection. But briefly, though, you're saying, and I've heard this from other law enforcement officers, grew up with cops, friends, dads, and so forth. There's a point where you know. Cops know because they're trained, but they also say everybody knows. There's a point where you know they don't want what you got. They want something you are that you don't want to give up. And you know that line, and you just got to decide, I'm not going to let them cross that line. Is that how you would teach it, Dave?
Right, that you're going to have a line in the sand, so to speak, in your mind as to your action point. And when defending your home is really the simplest scenarios that we could come up with because when somebody's breaking into your house while you're there, it's pretty easy to identify who the bad guy is. And if you give out a warning that there's somebody in the house and I've got a gun and I'm calling the cops, most bad guys who are crimes of opportunity, who are just looking for to steal something, would flee at that warning.
Right.
Someone who would continue to aggress through that type of a warning is the other kind of bad guy who likes violence because they like it, not because they're just trying to get what they want. And that's pretty clear.
Right.
If a person is still there after that kind of a warning, then what do you think they're there for?
Right.
And here we come to the essence of California law as it comes to self-defense, and that governs citizens as well as the police, and that is the reasonable man theory. What would any reasonable person do, or if a reasonable person looked at what you did, knowing what you knew at the time in that situation, would they say that what you did was reasonable?
Right.
Even if they wouldn't have done the exact same thing, would they say what you did was reasonable?
Right.
And that's the standard. That's the standard.
Okay, so for the audience, I want to go firmly back in the camp of disaster preparation. There's been an event of some kind. Let's go with the earthquake event. Perhaps not even a lot of devastation or destruction in our area to our homes, but specifically roads, bridges have been damaged or destroyed in parts of the city. There's a great deal of focus on that, and therefore a great deal of resources are being focused on that, and therefore bad guys believe that there are other places that are vulnerable, or there are simply people who are disaffected, hungry, they can't go into their own homes, and so forth. Food is running out in the stores, and so forth. Now people are being opportunist and looking for places to get things. So you're saying if you're going to put up barriers, we talked a little bit about barriers in the neighborhood. You've already planned with your neighbors, or you're putting up barriers, horses, other kinds of road blockages, saying stay out, road closed. And these are neighborhoods that are saying, hey, my road is closed because there's no reason for other people to come down this road right now. Things are not good. You've got signs on your doors, windows, you know, do not enter, but some people aren't listening. Is that where we are, Dave?
All right. That's as simple as a scenario as you can get, because they're not as somebody's going to say, well, why didn't you call 911?
Yeah,
well,
right.
That's not going to do any good.
I
knew that they were going to come, and
right.
And I gave this person a warning,
right.
And they didn't heed the warning. They continued to come pounding on the door. I retreated into my bedroom and locked it, and I warned them as they were kicking my door open.
Okay.
I was in fear for my life that this person intended to do me bodily harm, try to kill me.
Now,
that's as simple as a scenario as you can get, cut and dried.
Now, I have to ask you.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I have to ask you at this point. I mean, the differences between California law and Florida law, the case of George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman actually did call 911, and it is heard on the 911 tape several times, I'm in fear for my life, and I believe that I am being threatened, or something to that effect. There's something in Florida law that says if you clearly state that you are in fear of your life and being threatened, that you are fully able to use deadly force. But is there anything like that in California law?
Well, Florida law is titled Stand Your Ground Law.
Mm.
California doesn't have a Stand Your Ground Law by title,
mm.
but in principle, it's essentially the same, because the principle is the same, which is if you feel that your life is in immediate jeopardy, then you have the right to defend it, whether you're in your house or whether you're out of your house mm. in California. And it's, you know, that law is 100 years old. That principle hasn't changed for over 100 years. And that's pretty basic. Now, a lot of places, you're not allowed, in California, you're not allowed to have a gun outside of your home. Or you have to have a permit to have one and outside your carry one loaded outside your home. In a lot of places, it's hard to difficult to get that in California. That's a whole other topic.
Mm-hmm.
But the principle of being justified in defending your life if you are in reasonable fear that you're threatened, you can defend you can use whatever force is reasonable, justified and reasonable to defend your life, whether you're inside your home or whether you're outside your home. And you don't need to articulate that to anybody first. You don't need to call 911 and get it on a recording. That's just, you know, evidence to support your reasonableness later. You don't even have to retreat.
Right.
You don't even have to try to run away first in California.
Right.
So it's the law is pretty clear that, and I can tell you this, that in in every home defense shooting situation, a legitimate one, where, and by that I mean that there wasn't some other connection between the shooter and the person who got shot prior to the shooting, but where an unknown bad guy is breaking into a person's home, and that person shot that person. In not one case that I've been personally involved with investigating or handling the initial response by police personnel, has that homeowner been arrested for that.
Right, right. Excellent. Now, I want to give a little station break. We are the South Bay Show, preparing for a disaster in America. We have with us Dave Sauer, a 30-year veteran of law enforcement, also proprietor of GunfightingInc.com. And we're talking about preparing for a disaster, defending yourself in the event of a disaster. You've already collected all the food and water and medicine, and you've done all those things correctly, but now we have a different scenario, and that is there's others trying to take from you. And Jackie, I'm going to bring George in on Skype, so I guess we should do a station break. Who
yes,
do we
should.
Thank?
We can't get away with that very often. Okay, it's never too early to begin planning for your financial future. When it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars, you'll want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong, certified public accountants and consultants, is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay, and they are dedicated to providing professional services of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations such as Skate Park PV, Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, Torrance South Bay YMCA, Rotary, and Pediatric Therapy Network, among others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical experience with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. For more information, you can visit the website at www.bcws.com or call 310-542-0011 for a free consultation.
All righty.
That's George. All part of the preparedness stuff.
That is.
Yeah.
George, are you with us?
I am, yes.
Excellent. You sound great. So, George, did I give Dave a chance to talk some?
Well, that's, you know, it's always nice to have the expert do it. And I've, over the last few weeks, I've had an opportunity to do some more reading and look at a couple of DVDs that have been sent out. Mm-hmm. And bottom line, everything that I have seen or heard, Dave has just talked about. Years, I mean, I don't know. It's as long as something happens on your property.
Yeah,
I think that's probably a big thing. Is that correct, Dave? You're not going to, like you said, it's real difficult for anybody to get a license to carry and conceal these days.
It is difficult, but that doesn't. We're just talking about one tool.
Yeah.
When we talk about the principle applies to wherever you are.
Right.
And
right.
For example, let's say that you're driving into the mall parking lot, and where there is a bank in the same area of that mall, like on the outskirt road, and you just happen to be at the wrong place at the wrong time when bad guys like the North Hollywood Shootout come running out with hoods over their heads and wearing body armor and high-powered rifles, and they got bags in their hands, and they're firing bullets back into the bank as they're running out in the street right in front of you.
Right.
Now, would you be justified in hitting the gas pedal and running them over?
I would
absolutely.
I'm going to say yes.
Absolutely you would. Absolutely
yeah.
you would.
Yeah.
And was your life in danger?
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
But too bad.
You could easily justify that your life was in danger right then because you could see what they're doing and you were afraid that as soon as they turned in your direction, what was coming next?
Right.
Why didn't somebody do that, by the way?
somebody wasn't in the right place at the right time.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But that's an illustration of the principle. You're not at your house. You're in your car out in the public, and you didn't have a gun, but your car was certainly a good enough tool to stop the problem.
Right.
And
apparently that may have been that would have been the quickest way to have stopped them.
Yes. And the safest for the person.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So we are, it doesn't matter how much time we have, we are always running out of time when this subject is brought up because I guess there are so many different scenarios, but we talked a little bit about barricading the neighborhood. We talked about barricading your house. There's too many different scenarios for actually giving people plans. Do you guys remember those jacks when you're playing pickup jacks? Those little metal toys
yes.
that had like four prongs?
Yes.
Well, I don't know about you, but I have actually fallen on one of them, and they're very painful. And there are also street barriers that are sort of styled after those tools, basically metal versions that are 3 feet by 4 feet. But the little ones, if you spread them out over a floor or over a driveway, it makes it very difficult to walk on that driveway.
Were you watching Home Alone again over the holidays?
Yeah, maybe. But okay, that's it. Jackie, perfect segue. Home Alone, right? Macaulay Culkin. There are several scenarios of him in, especially Home Alone 2, where it's really contrived, where he's trying to prevent the bad guys from getting into, I think, someone else's home.
Right, right.
Are there things there that people can learn to do? Can you talk a little bit about the actual, okay, we all have talked about the scenario for a while. Now, what do we do? What are the first few things that are practical that we can do to harden our homes?
Well, one of the, of course, good locks, solid doors.
Right.
The doors that have beautiful, you know, cut glass and leaded windows in them that you could throw a brick through and then walk through the door. Those have their limitations.
Hmm.
But I have one of those on the front of my house.
Oh.
But you can, one of the best things you can do is if your house is set up such that you can actually have a secured area before you can get to the front door.
Almost like an enclosed patio or something.
Exactly.
A wall or gate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like an enclosed patio that someone has to get to a front security door or gate or screen where they would actually push the doorbell and then have to be buzzed through, or you can open your door and see who it is and walk out, that kind of thing, before they can actually get to the door that gets into your house. Other things are your landscape design that you want. For example, if you had gravel around the little border around your house so that if somebody was sneaking around outside your windows, you could hear it easier because it would be hard for them to walk quietly because the gravel would be crunching.
Right.
You wouldn't want to have shrubs or trees that would actually shield a person so that they could work unseen trying to open up a window or a door to get into your house. Alarms are nice, although a lot of people don't realize that some of these, a lot of these alarms that when your alarm goes off and it buzzes on a computer screen in some other state.
Right.
And then the person at the computer screen sees that it's your house, and then there's a number on the screen that goes to the local law enforcement, and then they call that number and tell them that the alarm went off at this house. That whole process, you know, takes some time.
Right.
And that, you know, that old saying that we talked about last time, when seconds count, the police are minutes away.
Right.
That's true.
Right.
That whole process of calling 911 and getting the call typed in and get it sent out to the car, and the car guy in the car getting it and then figuring out how to get to your house, that all takes some minutes.
Right. Nope, that doesn't fit our scenario. There's been a 7.5 earthquake, devastation throughout parts of Southern California, and nobody's coming.
Dogs are good.
Dogs are good. The other thing that and it doesn't fit our scenario, but while we're talking about it, one thing would be it was interesting and something that I learned about. It's a lot easier if you have your cell phone instead of where I keep mine, which is out in the kitchen charging. If you have your cell phone and you can call from your cell phone, the cell phone can move with you a lot easier than either a landline or possibly a cordless phone and smaller for you to dial 911. And if you're moving around, you can talk on it and tell
people. In the movies, they always cut the hard lines.
Right.
In the movies, yeah, the phones.
And dogs are only a minor inconvenience to a determined bad guy who's armed.
Right. No, but I was thinking that they would alert you.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they would alert you if somebody was in your backyard or something like that.
My house is so old that when you walk, it alerts me. Nobody can walk in the house or around the house on our hardwood floors without it creaking.
Uh-huh.
Especially
it's a security feature.
Especially as dry as it is. No, I feel that way these days, yeah.
Well, when you
motion-activated lights are great. Really bright ones.
Right.
I have them all over the outside of the house.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
No,
because
Dave.
Because bad guys, most of the time they want to be sneaky, and they don't want to be seen.
Right.
So anything that helps make it harder for them to be sneaky and makes it easier for them to be seen is going to make them want to go somewhere else.
When you mentioned, Dave, landscaping that is either dangerous because it gives too many spaces and places for people to hide, or appropriate because it allows you to hear as people get close to the perimeter of your home, immediately I thought, new business idea, sort of security landscaping. You go in and you do a security evaluation of someone's landscaping, and then you help them decide how to change that landscaping so that the home is more easily defensible. I think that's great. We haven't specifically – I'm sorry, Jackie.
Oh, speaking of home security, FYI, if you can call your local police department and they will come to your home and do a free assessment on your home security. Like we had that done a couple of years ago, where they come out and they check your doors, windows, fencing around your backyard, stuff like that. And anybody can do that.
Say that again.
Yeah, you can call your local police department and just ask them to have somebody come out, and you want to have your home security looked at just to see if it's good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they might make some recommendations. And
so, Dave, we George, Jackie, and I are still firmly in the circle. I want you to take a few minutes. George,
I'm not in the circle. I'm not in the circle.
I know. I can tell. Jackie's got the warrior heart.
I am not in the circle.
George,
we talked about 3 weeks ago when we talked about it. My wife's ready to go get the 303 out and do her thing, and then and I have a weapon that is unloaded. But next to my bed, and it would probably take me, if 10 or 15 seconds to put it together, if I heard somebody coming up the hallway.
Dave, Dave, I'm going to run you through a scenario that I experienced in were the riots in 94? The Rodney King, was that 94? I think it was better.
Yeah, it was before that.
Yeah, 1990 okay. riots.
Oh, okay. All right.
91.
Okay, so...
We moved here in 92, sorry, so it could have been.
All right, so anyway, so if you all remember, the riots started and they brought out the National Guard, mm-hmm. and there was like a lull or something, and then it was discovered that the National Guard had rubber bullets, and then the rioting really got into full swing. What happened was my husband had a trip to Mexico planned with a bunch of his buddies. And it started, and they were all, like, waiting, deciding whether or not they should go. And then that lull occurred, and they said, oh, the National Guard's here. Okay, we're going to go. So my husband takes off for Mexico with his buddies. And no sooner does the plane take off than all hell breaks loose. Mm. So I'm home alone, and we're under curfew. You can't get gas. You can't buy bullets. All the stores have been, you know, the shelves are empty. So I'm home by myself for the next 4 days and dealing with this. Mm-hmm. And as Dave mentioned earlier, the first thing he mentioned was planning, is not, you know, not to let these things take you by surprise. So home by myself, I blockaded my driveway with all the cars. Mm-hmm. I put on all of the lights at the exterior lights. I have those motion detector ones that you can just turn on permanently. I had one dog in the house, one dog out in the backyard. And I closed up and locked all the doors, the windows, closed all the blinds, curtains, and everything, just made sure everything was completely locked up tight. And then I basically had guns on just about where every front window was located. Was I ready?
You were ready.
I was
Whoa.
Ready. Okay.
Yeah, baby.
And then when my husband came home, he didn't hear the end of it for quite a while.
Well, there you go.
I barely had phone service. Right. You know, you couldn't get through to people.
Right. Can you, we have about 10, 15 minutes left. And George, do you have announcements?
I do have just a couple.
Do you want to do that now? And then I want.
Yeah, sure. I'll make this real quick.
Okay.
Next Tuesday's show, mm-hmm. Travis Shows and Kobe Webb, two law enforcement officers that work with canines. And in search and rescue will be on the show. We're going to talk about missing people, whether they be young infants, young people, the elderly. One really doesn't think about this, but people with Alzheimer's that get out and run around. They have started something called Find 'Em, and you can put a person's DNA, separate it so it's not mixed up with other DNA. You're going to make it much easier for a bloodhound, so to speak, to go find them. A way for $20, you can buy a kit, take your child's DNA, and put it away so that it's always available. And so we're going to talk about search and rescue and finding people, and that's next Tuesday. On 2-4, we're going to talk about evacuating babies and neonatal ICU patients, and education about hospitals and taking care of how are we going to get the young out of an area and an evacuation and care for those patients. So that's going to be with Dale White, and that's on 2-4. So that's what's coming up right now. And that's all I've got right now. Nothing locally is going on.
Yeah. So Dave, now we've talked about other aspects of securing the home, the perimeter, landscaping. Jackie took us through her frightening scenario during the Rodney King riots where she's got a gun at every window. Just take us out, Dave. We got about 10 minutes. Talk about weapons. I mean, your company is Gunfighting Inc. Talk about preparation of them and using them.
Okay. Well, there's an old saying that you never take a pistol to a gunfight on purpose. And what pistols or handguns have the advantage the only advantage they have is that their smallness allows them to be with us all the time. And so generally, if you think about the purpose of a pistol, it is to defend ourselves against unexpected threats. If we expected a threat, you'd take a rifle or a shotgun and a bunch of buddies with rifles and shotguns, and maybe some high-energy explosives if you had access to that. But you don't take a handgun to a gunfight on purpose, because handgun bullets are unpredictable and they're not great man stoppers, and you're trying to keep somebody from killing you, and you want to stop them right now. Having said that, handguns are probably the first choice of what most people pick for home defense, because they're, you know, they're inexpensive relatively, and you can put them in a drawer and have them there, and ammo's relatively inexpensive, and you, people just feel like that should be their first choice. And it's not a bad choice. For some, it might be the best choice. My personal home defense weapon is an AR-15. And some people would think, a rifle? And that bullet's going through walls and going into my neighbor's house, and that going through the walls of my house and going into my kid's room. Often over penetration is one of the things that they think about when rifle right off the bat. However, that is a common misconception. The AR-15 shoots a 5.56 or 223 caliber round, and depending on the round that's selected, if you get a high velocity soft tip bullet, they actually have less penetration through common house walls than a 9mm bullet, because it's a lot lighter, about a third the weight of a 9mm bullet, and it's traveling faster, it expands quick, and it doesn't keep on going through walls because it doesn't have the mass. It's my wife can shoot it easily. It doesn't have the recoil of a shotgun. It's easily reloaded. It holds a lot more bullets than a shotgun, and I can put a light on it to help illuminate when necessary, and it's easy to learn how to be accurate with it. You can be more accurate generally with a shoulder-fired weapon, a shotgun or a rifle, under stress, because you're holding it with both hands, and you got your shoulder, it's on your shoulder, and your cheek is on the stock, so you have more contact with it. You can be looking at the target, and you can be a lot rougher on the trigger and still hit with a rifle, whereas if you did all those things with a handgun, your odds of missing across the room are pretty good.
Right.
You hear reports all the time of people, get even police officers, getting into a shooting at pretty close distances, like across the hood of a car at a bad guy, and everybody shoots a bunch of bullets and nobody gets hit.
Mm-hmm.
You hear those stories,
yeah,
you know, all the time. And you think, well, how can that happen? Well, because when everybody's moving and you're moving, it's hard to hit with a pistol.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a person, I guess I could summarize it this way. If I had a person who had no firearms experience and I needed to prepare them to defend their house tomorrow, I would teach them, I could more easily teach them how to do that with a rifle like an AR-15 than I could with a pistol.
Now, that's why we have an expert. The AR-15 is a light semi-automatic weapon, a semi-automatic version of the M16 rifle, currently manufactured by Colt. Colt AR-15 started selling in 1963. What an excellent weapon.
Yes, and there's so many variations out there and options. You can get them for as cheap as $600 or $700 up to, you know, $2,000 or $3,000, depending on what quality and add on things that you want. And you put red dot sight on that and a light, and you've got what you need to be easily defend your home.
Okay.
And it's easy to have it unloaded and quick to load it up if, you know, safety is a primary issue in your house. And so that would be my recommendation, because that's what I use.
I think, did we not 3 weeks ago chat about a shotgun too, and the idea that at close range it's not spreading a lot?
Right. You have to shoot the shotgun inside of a typical, you know, house distances, 7 yards or 10 feet. You have to treat it like a rifle. But mm-hmm. the shotgun is a devastating fight stopper, mm-hmm. because you, one pull of the trigger, you have 9 to 12 or 20 bullets, essentially, coming out and impacting that person at the same time. So think of having 9 buddies with pistols shoot the guy, the bad guy, all at once. That's the effect of a shotgun on a bad guy.
And it's so always been my weapon of choice.
if for a person who's comfortable with it, who doesn't mind the recoil, and it is an excellent fight stopper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So our general conclusions are pistols are inaccurate and...
No. They're not inaccurate. It's just that
shooter is inaccurate.
it's more difficult to be accurate with a pistol in fight situations, mm-hmm. where you know your adrenaline's up and it might be low light, where you can't see your sights real clear. The bad guy might be moving. You may be trying to move to get to a cover. Let's say that you're hiding in your bedroom, and you're crouched down behind your bed, and the bad guy's getting ready to come in, and he may even say that he's got a gun, and he's kicked in your door, and now you've got a pistol in your hand that holds 10 bullets plus one in the chamber, and you're trying to hit this guy as he's coming to you with the handgun in your hand. Or you got a shotgun in your hand or a rifle, and you got to try to stop him before he gets to you.
Right.
You know, he just has to clear across the room. I don't want to my life on the performance of that pistol. Mm-hmm. I want to have something a lot. I want the odds in my favor, and so I'm gonna have a shotgun or a rifle.
Right.
Now. Now, having said all of that, it's important that the person be comfortable and confident with whatever they choose. And that requires solid training and some practice. And it's not hard to learn how to shoot a gun, a pistol, a shotgun, or a rifle. It's not hard. If a person can learn how to drive a car or play a musical instrument or, you know, a lot of other things that we do... They can learn to shoot in a short period of time with proper instruction.
Right.
And there we are. So give us some contact information, because you're the man that does that training.
Yep, gunfightinginc.com. You can check out the classes that we have, and there's links to some of the classes that were currently scheduled, and you can contact me through that, my email contact through there, and ask any questions that a person has. I'll be more than happy to share my opinion.
I have to say, Dave, my wife and I are not gun control nuts. We don't own a weapon, but we have decided to acquire one. And I'm going to get an AR-15 and a lighter handgun for my wife. We have decided that was important for us. My children are older. Often at home, but often not. It's just my wife and I, or when I'm out on business, it's my wife home alone, and we've decided that we're going to take that step in our own home. And
Joe is coming outside of the circle.
Yes, I am. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. We'll be back, but gunfightinginc.com. And that's the end of the stream portion. Thank you so much, Dave, for joining us.
Hey, thanks again for inviting me. Had a great time.
And George, you have any final thoughts?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm gonna go spend some more money.
Okay. Well, thanks, George, for being with us, and thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
Okay. Bye, bye, everybody.
Bye, Jackie. Bye, Joe.
Hang
Don't
on,
go
hang
anywhere.
On, hang on.